You're listening to the Australian Hunting and Beyond podcast with Matt. And when you hear this intro, you know that Frank's on. And we're going to be chatting about hunting, fishing, camping, and everything else that the outdoors has to offer. Let's get into it.
Let's get straight into it. All right, we've got Frank back. We are fresh off hunt camp up there with the Hunters Campfire boys. I can see you wearing that blaze orange hat with the Hunters Campfire logo, which is a great hat, and it's nicknamed the Frank after you. Geez, that was good fun.
Oh, great trip. Absolutely great trip, Matt. Good to be back. And, still wish I was there. Still wish I was there, mate.
Well, I mean, technically, you nearly didn't get out. I heard there was a bit of issues with you getting a bit bogged and needing some help, mate. Is that true?
Well, you know, I did have highway terrain tyres on a stock vehicle. So, yes, I did. Plus, I was towing a trailer. So, unfortunately, did get stuck. But the good thing is every man, his dog had something that it pulled me out with. And cheers to Rob Camp from Athena Spatial. He pulled me out with his new winch on his vehicle. So thank you, Rob, for that.
Rob, he's a great bloke. And if you haven't, check out Athena Spatial because, man, that map for Nundle, it was brilliant. So just for our listeners, if you haven't checked it out, you can purchase his maps on Avenza and they basically are like using Google Earth on Avenza while you're in the forest. It was absolutely sensational and he's done such a fantastic job of putting in roads and creek lines, and it makes such a big difference when you're in the forest.
Oh, yeah, no, definitely helped me out with, you know, finding spots to check out with young Joan. It was massive, massive help. I couldn't recommend them enough to everyone. They're just bloody great, great to have in hand. You know where everything is, and you can just, and it doesn't go towards your map count. So you can still have your three maps on there plus your Athena Spatial maps.
Yeah, it's brilliant. The only thing is it doesn't comply with DPI regulations, but I just found I was running the normal Nundle one from the DPI and then just had that as a backup and it was just so easy and, yeah, man, it was good. I'm so happy.
I did that too. And like even Rob does a little tutorial on YouTube on how to actually put those little pink spots into his maps if you like, and you can change them as a layer every single time if you like to as well. That was really handy as well.
Yeah, no, really good stuff there. So good on you, Rob. Keep that up, mate. And I look forward to seeing some more forests slowly getting in there. He's got a pretty decent list for the majority of the major ones, I should say, over in here in New South Wales. So not bad for a Queenslander. We won't hold that against him.
Oh, he originally was a New South Welshman, but what drove him to the madness to move up there? It's his issue, I suppose.
Well, I mean, you probably shouldn't talk bad about him after he pulled you out of getting stuck. I would have left you. I'm just putting it out there.
Never would talk bad about young Rob. He makes a great jaffle as well.
So, mate, there is so much to just cover off on deer camp. I was tossing up whether I could get up there or not, and I'm so glad I did. The Snowies is probably where I spent my time, but getting up to check out a new forest in Nundle was awesome. And been around so many great people up there. I had an absolute blast just bouncing ideas off each other, talking. Yeah, geez, it was good. I mean, well, one of the things I did, I was really shocked at, was the amount of leeches that place has. Holy crap.
Yeah, mate, they are everywhere. They are, buddy. They're a curse. They're an absolute curse, no matter where you turn. But people got some very inventive ways of getting rid of them. So that was quite exciting to see all different type of manners that they extinguish those leeches off themselves. It was pretty good to watch.
What was your favorite way of people trying to not get leeches around them?
Oh, Anthony there, he grabbed the salt. He put out his little camping mat that he has underneath the stretcher there, and he absolutely covered it in salt. It looks like it snowed there. And every leech that went onto that map just literally just thawed out into jerky straight away. There was that much salt around. But no leeches on him. No leeches on him.
I know. One of the nights we were in the sort of community area there. Man, I looked down, and besides the blood dripping down most people's legs, there was just movement on the floor. I can't believe how many there were. You'd just go through like a little walk through the bush and you'd look down and there's like, they're just on your boots, just plenty of them. So it was I've never had a forest or even any, I've done the Shoalhaven, I've done so many different areas, camping and bushwalking, and I have never seen so many leeches in all my life. It was insane.
They were quite prolific around the place, and yeah, it just, I found a little bit of salt on them did wonders, but also spraying the boots and gaiters with a bit of Bushman's, that was the best thing. Bushman's inside the gaiters, I found didn't have any problems after that of them sneaking underneath and attaching themselves to my person.
Yeah, no, that was, oh, I was doing the same thing, bit of Bushman's or off or any of those. If you just threw it on the inside of the gaiters and on the boots, I found they didn't really, I think I got bitten three times, and that was before I started doing that because I was just like, eh, I'm right here. But at one stage there, I had the gaiters on. I could feel them. I could feel it underneath my gaiter moving my trouser as it was moving around. So it was, yeah, they got their money's worth, I think. There was a lot of blood just getting around there.
You know, they find their ways. They find their way, especially if you start making some stomping noises. They start searching it out. You just see them coming for you.
Yeah, oh, it's crazy. So let's talk about it. I, you know, shout out to Hurls and Jono, and also Marky wasn't there for this one, but both those boys were. And what a great job of organizing such a big group to get together and go for the hunt. It was a great few days. I was just disappointed I couldn't spend more time there. Obviously, it's hard with the kids, but, you know, that was a good 4-day sort of stretch for me, which was nice. I know a couple of boys would be there, you know, for the full week like yourself. And it was really, there was just a lot of good stuff going on. And one of the things I did like was they had a big basically map where people circled and said, hey, I'm going to be hunting in this area, this area, this area. So a bit of safety there. And the majority of people hunting in the forest were obviously for that. So it was pretty much everyone in camp was hunting in the forest. So that was quite a good thing. And I felt that was a much better way to do it. So that was a really good idea. And I think you organized the map, didn't you?
Yeah, no, well, young Rob actually got it printed out. I just picked it up is all I did. But it was really good for knowing where everyone was. And it helped out if the case there was some sort of situation where we needed to go looking for someone. We know what area they'd roughly be in as well. It's more of a safety thing, really. You're not shooting over top of each other and you know who's in what area and stuff like that. And, like, sometimes, you know, when you're hunting and then you can hear a shot and you know it comes from the east and you go, oh, you know, such and such might be lucky this afternoon. And when you get to camp, hey, how'd you go? So, oh, yeah, nah, got one. Here he is here hanging up. Oh, fantastic stuff. Like, that also helps as well, just knowing where your neighbor is going to be and stuff like that and who the neighbor is. So, yeah, that worked out really good. It's a real safety thing, and you know where everyone is and who's in what area. That really did help out a lot, I feel, with feeling more comfortable being in the forest.
Yeah, and look, on top of that, what I did love is they had the Zolios there, and I was lucky enough, I know you were as well, that we were able to play around with the Zolio for a couple of days. And
yeah, no.
Man, I wasn't sold on it before I actually had a play with it, and now I am. I think it's an absolute great bit of gear. The ability to message each other, loved ones, because there was no reception there. And correct, it had this sneaky little feature that you can set up where it checks in every, I think, 6 minutes and sends your GPS location to whoever you put in as the email user. So I've got my thoughts about that.
I know exactly what your thoughts are.
So I've got my thoughts. So let's get into the hunting part.
Right.
Man, really good. I jumped in there. I know you found some good areas, but I, on the first day, got in there. Geez, I covered some ground. Very hilly terrain. Very shocked that, speaking of Hurls and talking about those, you know, the boys being up on that terrace overlooking creeks and watching the girls, and there was nothing down there. So I went through all that and just went, you know what, nothing's here. So I'm going to go up and try and find some higher spots and a bit of flatter terrain and see if they're hanging around up there. And that's where they were. So was able to, in that first morning hunt, found a heap of different rub trees. Could not find a scrape for the life of me, but rub trees galore. And then I sort of went, you know what, I'm going to call it and head back to camp, try and get some sleep because I got in late the night in the dark and it was absolutely torrential rain. So that it was a pain in the backside. So I think I just got camp set up and it hit, which put a bit of a dampener on socializing and meeting people, which, you know, that's is what it is. Can't control the weather. So found those rubs and then I went down and I found this nice little trail and there was a really good glassing straight across to this other gully. And I was like, you know what, facing the sun in the morning, you know, near the rubs on the way, I can just see this is a really nice little patch.
Yep.
And so I decided I had the secateurs there and I was going to clip a few saplings to make a nice quiet entrance into this area. And I've lifted the gun up nearly, you know, just under my shoulder just to hold it while I was leaning back to get the snips. And what I was running, just so people know, is I was running a 12-litre Mountain Designs pack and then I was running a Hunter's Element bum bag system. So I had them just sort of tucked into one of the little pockets there that I could pull out pretty quickly. And as I was grabbing and pulling that out, well, I didn't even get that far. I've put them down. I've sort of noticed, you know, 100 metres away across the gully, this faint outline of a deer. And I've sort of just slowly turned my head and I'm just looking at this buck and he's just looking in my direction. So I froze.
Pinger.
He must have seen me moving beforehand, but obviously being decked out in camo, having a lot of those saplings behind me would have completely broken up my silhouette. So I knew something was there, but I don't think he could work it out. And the wind was in my favor. Thermals were good. So he literally just stood there looking.
Yeah, I wonder if he thought you were another buck. If you're in the saplings zone, you're moving around a bit. I wonder if you thought you were another buck.
I'd stopped. Maybe. Well, maybe, but I'd stopped at this stage. So he was locked on. And I honestly think it was a good 5 minutes that we were just standing there and I was just watching him because I was hurting. By the end of it, I was like the awkward position that my arm was. It was right, like someone, you know, when you used to, like as a kid, you'd get someone's hand up behind their back and pull it up.
Yeah,
it was like that. That's like what I was sort of doing because I'd had to tuck in and then I was too worried to move. And then same as the rifle was up. So I'm holding it in this. I must look like a complete tool. But I didn't want to move because I'm like, oh my God, you know, that I don't want to shoot him. He's a good sized buck too. I was quite happy with the look of him going, this is awesome if I get the chance to have a shot here. And after that sort of 5 minutes, he turned his head and he sort of put his head up and I don't know if he was just having a bit of a sniff of the leaves. So I had to do it and I just moved both arms to try and quickly get it. And he just was straight back onto me. He must have been doing it, watching me out of the peripherals. And as soon as I move, he just targets straight back and then he didn't spook. He just trotted off slowly the way he came back into the brush. And I was like, okay, this is good. Well, you know, I found the rubs. Where I saw him, it's about 140 meters roughly to where it was. So in the vicinity, I'm pretty happy with that. Need to find these scrapes. But so that was the plan for the next arvo. Was going to that arvo was to go back and try and set up to get him, which sort of didn't play out that way. But, yeah, I mean, so here's my thoughts. What can I say? So after I found him and let people know, I spotted him.
Yep.
It just so happens that even though we'd had these penciled off map, there was another hunter who was in there looking and found the scrapes only 100 meters from where I saw him. Now, my thoughts, and I've got a bit of evidence here, I will say this. I'm of the opinion Hurls was giving out my GPS coordinates.
On Zolio.
And I reckon he sent Michael in and said, hey, he saw a buck here, just go and snipe it. Because James Gregg will be really happy to know he's no longer the buck thief. We've got a new person who's taken that title. And well done, Michael. He shot the buck. He within, I reckon, probably 50 meters of where I saw it.
Yeah,
and he got it. He's the new buck thief. What can I say? Good job, Michael.
Side of the hill. Well done, mate. Oh, look, I remember I was in camp and Michael came in and he just yelled out, Frankie. And I'm like, hey, mate, what's happening? He goes, I got him. I said, what? You got him? I was like, no way. And I ran over and had a look at him. I'm like, oh, well done. And he was super excited. He was telling me how much he was pacing up and down. He was happy as. And I thought, this is what it's all about. This is Hunt Camp 101 right here. And I thought, this is such a magical moment. And he was so ecstatic and I was so happy for him. High fives all around. Everyone come out, their tents and just, you know, high fiving him. Well done, mate. What I can say is when he did tell me the story and Yeah, I'm sure he can back it up. But he said that he shot him on his scrape. He came over to the scrape and he was messing around on it and he shot him on the scrape. So good on him for actually getting the deer like that. That's definitely something every hunter needs to do. Yeah.
We actually went back together. So when he came in and said, oh, look, I accidentally came in and found these scrapes just off roughly the area hunting, I was like, hey, it's public land, man. You can do what you want.
Yeah.
And I said, how about we go there the next arvo and we do a sit and wait? So he sat off the scrapes and I went and sat off the rub trees.
Oh, yeah.
And I made a big error there. I was downwind of a dead pig and then moved multiple times and the wind just kept coming. But, geez, it was painful. But, look, is what it is. And no luck, unfortunately. And then we got hit with the rain and getting out of there in the dark with pouring rain. It was fun. We had a good experience with that one. But, no, most definitely, man, I think he did it the next day. I took off and went and explored another part of the forest and – He was successful in knocking him over. So well done, Michael. Great job, mate. I'm really happy for you.
Yeah, no, he done really well. He's getting mounted now. So good on him for doing that. And yeah, that's his first proper one for the State Forest. Good on him.
Yeah, it's a ripper. Talking of bucks.
Yes, which one you want to talk about?
you elaborate.
Well, where can we go from here? Well, there was plenty of deer seen on the week that I was there at the hunters camp. First day is always scout day, so you make as much noise as you need. But go and find the sign. Go find the rutting pads. Go find the rub trees. Go find all that sort of stuff. Get out there amongst it and know every single piece of that one square kilometre, as Hell says. Make sure you know that one piece of square kilometre really well so you know where the trails in and out are, where all activity is happening, and you know where you can stand to see everything. So that was a great idea. Got to my location that I actually scouted on Rob's map, the Athena spatial map. Walked literally 200 meters. I was going to head to the east. Joan started indicating to the west, following a ground trail. So I followed her down and would have been, I snaked down this particular side of the, this side of a hill and got to this little clearing. And I mean, little clearing, it's probably 30 meters in diameter, 40 meters in diameter maximum. But that's where I found the first rub trees and all the scrapes, or I say Joan found them all. She was smelling everything and I was taking photos and marking them on the events of onto Rob's map, sorry. Then she took me further to the north, so I followed all that. And long and behold, we get through scrape after scrape after scrape. I think it was 15 scrapes I found in a 200-meter stretch. At the very end, got this lovely clover patch that had, it looked like a couch lawn that you play bowls on, flat as, and it was long and narrow, so probably about 60 meters long and about, I'd say, 30 meters wide. And at the very end of that was a really big red deer wallow. So that was really good to see that. And Joan was really excited about smelling around there. Even got a photo of her sitting next to it to show how big it was. That was pretty exciting. So thought of a red coming in and wallowing in that was, yeah, that was definitely a draw card for me. So anyway, I cut heaps of blue gum saplings. I even set up a little hide. There was this beautiful cut stump about 40 meters away from one of the scrapes at the very start. So I put a little hide around that with some cut off bluegum saplings and just sat there and thought I'll just watch over this in the morning and afternoon. And if I get bored here, then we'll go over to the wallow and see how that pans out. So yeah, next day, went down with Joan. The great thing about having an indicating dog is that you may not see absolutely nothing, but they smell everything. So coming down this S path down the side of the hill, she starts winding, and the great thing about the map is I can bring up the map, put it on her nose and turn it the way she's pointing, and I can see that she's pointing at the scrape, at the very first one. So I know that there is a buck there. So I now know there is a deer at the scrape. All I gotta do is ninja my way in there, find him there, shoot him, deal done, great, pick up the buck, go back to camp a champion and go get my knives that I've won. So I thought. So make my way down, and at this point in time, I get down the very edge of these blue gum saplings that I cut a track into, and she was winding extremely hard right in front of me, and she didn't want to move. So that usually means like she wants to hold point as like she knows it's very, very close. Me knowing that, I was just waiting to see any movement. So I stood at the very end of the saplings before I entered them and looked down this channel, and she was just holding point. So I was looking for binoculars, trying to see any antler movement, anything like that. And mind you, like this thing, it's thick as in there. It is really thick in there. Blue gum saplings everywhere on the other side of this little clearing. So I inch my way forward bit by bit by bit, get to the very end of those blue gum saplings. And I thought I might just poke my head out and just turn just to see what's happening out to the west. And as I've done that, this buck has jumped up, or it would have been about 50 to 60 meters away, and he was inside the blue gum saplings. So by the time I brought the rifle up, I've swung past him, and I've just seen the back of his body. He was a mean owl with a gray. He was in the rut phase, that rut color phase, with a gray neck on him. So I seen that. Couldn't tell you how big his antlers were, because I didn't. All I seen was the blue gums moving around them. But by the time I brought the rifle back down on him, that was it. He was gone. So that was very heartbreaking to see, knowing Joan had done all this work. And so she got a good pat, but I felt like I'd let her down. Something severe. So he wasn't going to come back to that scrape that afternoon. So I thought I'd contour around and went around a bit more, but nothing else happened that afternoon. Then it would have been the next day. Anthony arrived, cousin Anthony arrived at the hunter's camp, which is great. And I was having a chat to him about what I found and everything, and he said, let's go sit out off the red wallow. So I went and sat off the red wallow, and nothing happened off the red wallow. So there's one afternoon burnt. The next morning, I wanted to give that place a bit of a rest, and I found a sneaky little cut trail through the pines that forestry had made. So I followed that, and we had seen a heap of deer on that trail. Joan winded hard where two pine forests meet. There was this lovely bit of nature strip, natural timber in between. And we went over Little Creek, followed her around the path, and we seen a deer just go over the top of the hill. So I let Anthony jump in front, let him go a bit more forward than me. He got over the ridge and he was looking over to the west. I went over the ridge and Joan started winding hard from the east. As we got over, there was a massive, massive pine tree. It would have been about 30 meters long by about 2 meters in diameter, and she was trying to wind over the top of that. And so I couldn't see past it, and there was no branches on it for me to jump up over and have a look at it, over it. So I was just trying to sneak a bit more forward and edge way a bit more forward than that. And I thought I was getting to the end of it where I could actually sneak in and see them, but the wind just moved just that little bit, and I could tell because Joan just turned instantly and looked straight at me, and that's usually the wind's gone the other way. And sure enough, I just heard this stumbling of footsteps and just got over to the end of the pine just to see, you know, three of these does just take off down the path, and off they went into the thick scrub down the other side of the track there. So anyway, met up with Anthony again. We walked around up on top of a track, did another 2Ks to get on top of this hill. And I said to him, we'll walk down through the pines again at the very top, and it'll take us down to where the car was. And so we got to the top there, and we were a bit bushed. So we sat down and had a chat. We sat down for about half an hour. And you wouldn't believe it, Matt, as we're sitting there, this young buck jumps up onto the track, probably about 40, 50, 20 meters. I could throw a rocket at it and hit it. That's how close it was. So you pass judgment on how close the deer is, because there's heaps of speculations about how close it was. I couldn't touch it with my hand, just in case anyone ever brings that up. Wasn't able to do that. But anyway, it was facing away. By the time I got on the track, it was facing away, pulled the rifle up, and had the rifle on full power, and it pretty much took up two-thirds of the rifle scope. As it was walking away, I thought about putting it square on the top of his tail, and then I thought, no, I'd go a bit higher, squeeze the shot, and I've pulled the shot, and it's pretty sure it's gone right into a pine tree somewhere. But the amazing thing is the buck didn't do anything. He just kept on walking like nothing happened. Like it was a lightning strike, and that was it. So I took two steps to the left after reloading to take another shot, and as soon as I took the two steps left, he's turned around, seen me, and he's just done one dive over the edge and off he went to the abyss. And that was probably my best shot at getting a deer that trip, pun unintended. So I was quite gutted after that, as you can imagine. Jones looking for a new owner as we speak. So
I thought Rob had that.
Yeah. No, well, I think she'll take anyone at the moment, considering my performance. So, yeah, that was just one of those things. One of those things, Maddie, and anyway.
All right, so I want to unpack that one a little bit. You were sitting there talking with Anthony. When we're saying you're talking, is it whispering or is it just talking like normal?
No, we're just having a normal conversation. We weren't yelling at each other, but we're just having a normal conversation like you and I are now.
Yeah. See, I am more and more thinking the more experience I get with deer, and I don't think the noise sometimes is as prolific in causing an issue. I feel if there is noise and sight, they're off. But
yep.
I think that if you are just, you know, I'm not saying, again, but some people have taken, I've mentioned about shutting the car door and shooting something within 50 meters, which happened. And that wasn't done deliberately. We were hiking in a fair way. I didn't think there'd be anything there, but they were there. I don't think that sometimes, now, not saying all deer are like that. I do feel that's fallow, and I'm talking mainly about fallow as opposed to reds and Samba and the like. But fallow, I sort of refer to them as the Labrador of the deer species. I just think if it's noise and it's sight, they're gone. If it's wind, you're gone. If they scent you, you're out. Like they're just 100%. Yep. But if you make a little bit of noise, it's not the game killer that I think, you know, a lot of people think it is. If you are doing that in isolation.
You know, I would agree with that. I would agree with that. As we're walking through this path, there were black cockatoos and they were taking pine cones off the trees and dropping them all around us. So they were making a big crash once they hit the floor. And we're talking pine forest was eerily quiet in there. And so all you hear is these cockatoos chewing pine cones, dropping them on the floor. And, you know, as we're moving through the forest, you can still hear them doing it. And that didn't bother the deer because obviously they were, you know, only about 100 meters away when Joe winded them. So, yeah, I think they don't mind the noise every now and then. I think if you are bulldozing through the forest, I think they're going to obviously look over and catch on to see what's going on.
Yeah.
But I think the odd stick breaking, definitely not. It's the bush makes noise no matter where you go. So I feel, yeah, the odd noise here and there. Even at that point in time, during the rut, I think the young bucks are just a little bit less focused on what's happening around them, which is very task focused about getting to certain places. And I think that's what this buck happened with. This buck was, he had somewhere to be and he wanted to be there, and he was walking through and he was cutting through forest and everything. He didn't take a path. He was cutting through forest, which you rarely see. You see all the does walking along the paths or everything like that, but he was actually making a beeline somewhere when you cross that path. So yeah, I think that the young bucks are a little less attentive at that time of year. And I think the does are usually the ones that spot you more often than not. In saying that, though, you know, you could be 60 meters away cracking sticks underfoot unless they actually look over and see you moving. I think that's what it is. They hear the noise, they see you, then they'll take off. But yeah, it's best. Yeah. If you do crack a stick, sometimes it pays just to stop, have a quick look around. Don't see any ear movements, any flickering or any heads bobbing up and down, then you're pretty much still good to keep on going on that route, I reckon.
Yeah, I'd agree. I just think that I've made some noise and still seen deer, but I've been relatively still. And I just think it's that combo. You know, even the hunt down south where I missed that doe, there was two of them there and I was able to slowly go down, reload, and that wasn't a quiet thing, but they didn't take off. So I think it's got to be that combination. It's more important, hunt into the wind. Make sure that wind is in your favor. It can be tricky sometimes because it swirls and that can give you up. So it's definitely the main prerogative there. But look, on the dog, wow. I had so lucky. So again, shout out to Hurls and Jono. They took a few of the boys for a walk around camp to show them what to look for, because there was a mix of hunters, people with experience, people that were pretty brand new, and that was really good to see such a variety there. And we went for the wander, and I was lucky enough to watch Hurl's dog in action. That's the first time I've had an indicating dog or been there with an indicating dog, and just watching her and how she operated was absolutely brilliant. Thoroughly enjoyed that experience, just seeing how she moved, where picking things up. It's, man, it's a game changer. It's so cool to watch. Yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed that. And getting out there and going through, and one of the things I've struggled with is finding bets. Yeah. And that was really good because we were able to sort of find one and go through where and why, and Hurls and Jono are a wealth of knowledge and experience. So it was nice for me to be able to go out there and go, hey, all the things they were pointing out and showing, I go, hey, that I knew that by the beds thing, which is great because, as I said, I'm always about learning. And the rest was just that reinforcement that, hey, yeah, all right, everything I'm doing is correct. And I've sort of felt that way for a while now that I know what the sign is. I know where it all is. It's just about getting through. And hey, this was the third new forest and this year, three forests. And unfortunately, like yourself, that last morning I missed a little spiker. And it was about 120 when I first saw him. Wind was good. He's on the road. So obviously had the rifle cleared, magazine out, not able to fire. And I was going forward and back and just sort of tracking him, but trying to catch him up and back off, catch him up, back off. So I got within 60 meters of him and then sort of pushed that back out to about 80 meters. And he was browsing across the road to get into the pines. So I made the, I guess, plan to jump into the pines so that I could load the rifle, get ready and try and catch him up without making too much noise, but put myself in a position that as he came across, I might have the shot. The theory worked out pretty well because I got to the point where he was probably at about the 80 meter mark and I was able to get there in a pretty good position and wait for him to sort of keep coming across. And I had a bit of a shooting lane there, so I was pretty happy where the shooting lane was. And then as he's coming across, I, you know, let out a bit of a doe call to try and pull him up, and it worked, a treat. Now, my problem was, like someone else at the camp, he stopped behind a bloody tree.
Tree in the forest? Damn it.
Oh, man. I was just like, a little bit further, and he would have been perfect. It would have been a great shot, broadside, bit open. So I couldn't shoot. So I'm sitting there, and this was the interesting thing, is he knew something was up because I'd given up the game, right? And he was then alert as hell. And unfortunately, then he's went to take off. And there was another spot that he was going through that gave me a bit of a shot, but yeah, no good. Just right. Unfortunately. I was just like, damn it. But positive is, I've gone to three state forests this year, three different state forests, got on the deer in all the forests, knocked over two, missed a shot on the third. I'm pretty happy with how I'm traveling in the old state forest at the moment.
Yeah, no, 2024 is a good year for you so far, Matty, that's for sure.
Yeah, no, it has been. I'm a bit devoed. I'd love to have got that third and said, hey, three in a row. They say good luck comes in threes, and that did not happen. Now, talking of luck, oh, this was a costly trip for me, Frank. I think I'm going to have to send the bill to the Hunter's Campfire.
What happened?
Oh, man. So, look, I clocked up. I had a bit of a kill rate was up there, to be honest.
Yep.
I had two wallabies jump into the side of my ute, driving around the forest. That was good. They did bounce off into the bush. So
I'm sure they still survive. I'm sure they're probably out there eating now.
They probably did. But then on the second morning, heading in, and I was going pretty slow. Roads are great up in Nundah, I will say that. They're fantastic.
Yeah.
Best roads I've been on in a state forest by far. And going only about 40Ks because it was pretty dark, obviously getting out there early and had the spotties and everything running. I come up to this sort of, not a turn, but just sort of slight little, like a little bend. On the left-hand side, this embankment that's higher than the car.
Yep.
And for some reason, this kangaroo decided that he was going to jump from that embankment to land into the middle of the road, a meter in front of my car. So I hit him with the bull bar, flush in the middle.
Thanks for coming.
Oh, he's damaged both my spotlights. The bull bar's been pushed back into the car. So, man, I just was like, and yet what was worse is it was only about 20 meters from a dead roo on the road. So it must be a bit of a hot spot there, I'll tell you that much. And yeah, he took off into the bush. Now, who knows what happened, but he did some damage in the car. So that was, I was just spewing about that. You know, this is bloody hell. Like, can my luck get worse? Well, the deer god said, hold on, we can show you more. So that last day, the weather was turning and coming in pretty bad. And the weather was up and down. It was quite wet. And I didn't have the same problems as you getting out. My Triton just powered through, even with the trailer, powered through
that. Haven't you got mud tires on your vehicle?
All terrain, not mud. Calm down. Just a little bit more than you, all right? Got through that. No problems whatsoever. Driving home, at some stage, I must have kicked up a rock. Now, my camper trailer is a ute tub, so it's nice and high. It's got very good clearance, so it's good for four-wheel driving, and it's got a canopy on it. Now, the problem with that is there's the glass at the front of the canopy. Well, I've obviously kicked a rock up and shattered that window, haven't I? Which then followed. Like, I wouldn't have been too unhappy that, hey, yeah, smashed window happens, not the greatest of deals. Yeah, it's going to be cost me, it's going to be pain. But I then had torrential rain to the point where I could not see 10 meters ahead of me for a good hour and a half of the drive home. And the ute was like a swimming pool.
Yep. The ute was like a swimming pool.
Man, it was just ridiculous. I got in there and just went, oh, man, not only do I now have to clean the whole thing out and try and dry it all out, but there were so many electronics because I was running my fridge in there and the battery and, oh, man, that was annoying. I was just like the luck there. It ended up being a pretty costly trip up there, that's for sure. But and then, oh, what about my awning that lasted the first night?
Oh, yeah, that was terrible.
I have it came with the trailer, just an old King's one. It had mold on it. I'd never opened it, I'll be honest, before we got up there. And it was just to put over the little cooking section. And yeah, the rain hit that first night and it bent one of the frame poles. And yeah, that was just game over. So wasn't ideal, but just means I've got to get a new one. But that's all right. Mate. These things happen. It's a costly trip.
Mate, your poor wife's camper. She must be very, very upset with you right now, mate.
Oh, it's the hunting camper now.
Mate. No, okay.
Let's just keep that one under wraps. Right. But, yes, she came back and when she's seen all these things, she's just going, this is bloody expensive venison. she's not happy about that one.
It's the meat of kings. It's the meat of kings, Stella.
It's laced with gold. But
mate, you get that. Oh, that's hunting. You get that.
Ah, it is. It's the reason I have a bull bar in the car because I'll tell you what, if I didn't, geez, it would have done some damage.
No, that's it.
It is what it is. It was a fantastic trip. The camper worked bloody great. Found a couple of things I'm adding to it. Nice little shower tent. I bought that on the weekend and it's just going to go up next to the shower part. And I was nice and high away from those leeches that you boys were dealing with down there on the
Well, unfortunately, that's all part of the experience when you go to Hunter's Campfire, unfortunately, Matt. But yeah, in saying that, we're dry when we need it to be. So that's the important thing. But I know you were trying out a new system for carrying stuff into the bush, and I wanted to travel a little bit more lighter. So I thought I'd reach out to James from Blackfoot Design and see if you could make me a stalker's vest. So in New Zealand, you see these boys going around where they've got these vests on where they're going out and they're pigging and stuff like that. Anyway, they've got a short sleeve hoodie on and they've got pockets everywhere on them. And I thought, I wonder if James could do the same. And James was very happy to step up to the task. Custom made me a prototype vest. And yeah, it actually worked really well for what I wanted it to do. It held what I needed to hold. There will be a couple of modifications we're going to make to it, but he's going to start making some molly bags as well, which would be great to fit on the back of this vest because I've got some molly webbing on the back of it. But it held everything I needed it to hold, even with a couple of bottles of water in there, and fitted me perfectly. He customized some zippers on the side. So when I sat down, I was comfortable to sit down. He put a nylon liner at the back of it and made the tail a bit more longer. So when I sat down on that wet stump, I didn't get wet at all, which was fantastic. Yeah, that worked out really well. I was really, really happy with that and fit everything I needed it to fit in it, and I didn't have to carry such a large backpack. It was much easier to maneuver and everything through the bush. So, yeah, shout out to him. Thank you so much for making that. I look forward to using that in the future. And, yeah, can't wait to see what else he's going to do, to tell you the truth. Went up and met him and his lovely wife and kids. And, yeah, he's very passionate about hunting and things like that. And I think even now he's coming back from a trip in Moraga. So
yeah, he cut that one short. He was had pneumonia, so he was in hospital for a bit there, and now he went down there and then started feeling crook again, so he didn't end up getting out and hunting very often, which is a shame. So best wishes there, James. Get better, mate. Hope you're back out there soon and joining us hopefully for a hunt later in the year.
Yeah, no, need to get out and go chase some sambar, I reckon.
You did leave something out there. You left the taunting of myself when you visited James.
The taunting? Oh, yes.
Don't pretend like I didn't do anything.
Oh, yes, I remember. James showed me the footage of that deer. He zoomed it right in on his computer screen, and I have no doubt it is the same deer. I have no doubt whatsoever. I'm happy to go to the grave with backing that. No worries whatsoever. That is definitely the same deer, the one that is on Tristan's film and the one that he shot. I looked at it on the wall, had the extra tine down the front, it in same palm configuration, three spikes on the right-hand side, antler, nice palm on the left. It's definitely the same deer in my opinion.
I've moved on. There's a new buck thief.
The rest of the community hasn't moved on though.
We might have to get Michael on to tell us his side of the story at some stage.
Poor Michael's got to come in to defend himself.
I've heard from James and heard from yourself about the idea of running this vest, and I'm very curious. And I actually didn't get to have a look at it. We just were busy down there, weren't we?
We were very busy.
It's a full-on couple of days. Like you're socializing and whatnot, but you're also out there to hunt, and you're just in and out, and you know, doing the best you can. So I didn't actually get to see you wearing it or running it. So it is something I'll have to check out next time we go out. But
yeah,
you were kind enough to lend me your Moroka 30 wedge-tail bino harness.
Yeah, it's pretty much a mini backpack for the front.
It's huge. Yeah. I love it. It's so good. Yeah, I've been running it since. And appreciate you passing that over to us to play around with, because best probably bino harness I've used, I will say that. The magnets are strong. I found that was an issue with a couple of other brands, that you'd lean forward. The Twin Elements one, I think it is, or Twin Needle or whatever they're called, you'd lean forward and it just opened and your binos would fall out.
They've got the
zippers, which I'm not a fan of because they're making noise. So Hunter's Element is not bad. It's probably better, but it's smaller. Moroka 30, quality. A lot of storage. It's got the pouches on there with it, which are not too small, so everything fits in really nicely. Was able to get the GPS, my Garmin 64 ST in there. Also get the rangefinder on the other side. Had another pouch at the front with a webbing on the front like a net. So I was able to put the wind indicator in that. So it's nice, easy to get to run in the front. I could run and have my knife or my callers. And then you've got a pouch underneath in the bottom as well. I didn't even use anything for that. That was nothing there. And then in the actual thing, you've got zip-up pockets as well. So you put your keys in there I've found, just so many places. And the other thing I love about it, and I've got access to a little bunny block.
Yep.
And so I jumped out there and I took the thermal out, my Hick Micro Griffin, just to play around with it realistically. And it fits easily in that bino harness.
Yeah, they're quite large. They are.
Yeah, it's brilliant. Pretty much I can run both. Chest. I will say that. So I ducked out there and took a mate there and we got a bunny there the other night. And then I was after foxes because I saw one in the day. I went there to chop some wood and I saw one there. So went back trying to get this fox in. Thermal game changer. Jeez, it's great. But I've never used it during the day. And I went, you know what? I want to go have a bit of a play with it in the morning and see what it's like in that first light sort of period. Wow.
Eye-opening.
So they've got a heap of ruse there and no tags, so no culling of them.
Yep.
I literally could see 2 of 8. The thermal picked up all of them.
Yep. Isn't it amazing, eh?
I was sitting there going, holy crap, how many animals am I not seeing? And these roos, they were just up against something back there, had no silhouette, just blended, and this thing just picked them up so easily. It was just like, wow, that's crazy. Now, that was early morning. I'm not sure what it's like the sort of, you know, later in the day, but that was cool. It was a real eye-opener to the point where I'm thinking maybe that is a good scanner in the state forest in that morning session to see what is about. Because, yeah, maybe I'm missing some things, which, hey, guaranteed I'm missing things. You know, like I don't think anyone out there sees everything. So, yeah,
they really certainly have their place. They certainly have their place. I was watching one guy, a deer culler in New Zealand, and he was training indicating dog, and it was a Labrador, and it was indicating on this hillside, and it was full of tusket grass, and couldn't see anything on it, put the thermal on it, and he could see 3 deer looking straight at him 50 meters away, and they're in the tusket looking straight at him. He took a photo of the dog indicating, can't see him, takes a picture through the thermal, there they are, clear as day, you can see it. So it's like turning on, near like turning on x-ray machine sometimes.
It's crazy. So good. Oh, I'm super impressed. I can't wait to play around with it more. It was awesome. Plus, just identification as well, being able to see what you're looking at night. So
looking at a pair of eyes, actually making out a shape, a proper shape.
Yeah, exactly. We didn't even spotlight, to be honest. We were walking around just with the thermal, just sort of glassing in night, and that's what it felt like, and just going, all right, there's something there. Even if it was, you know, beautiful thing, I would say if you're going to get one, get the rangefinder. Geez, that's so good, because it is hard to have that depth perception.
I've heard that, I've heard that.
Yeah, there was one there. I didn't know where it was. I think it was a fox now, reflecting on it, but it just seemed further away. But I actually think it was closer than what it was than this roo. But, hey, like, whatever, it doesn't really matter. Yeah, that being able to just hit the rangefinder, find out how far it is, awesome. We were able to get a bunny. It was pretty easy to see the bunny, probably about 60, 70 meters.
Yeah, right.
And know it's a rabbit. And range find, get in, and we end up knocking him at, I think, about 40 or 50 meters, I think it was, roughly. And it was great. It was just like, this is so cool to play with. Like, I was more than happy. I didn't even pull the trigger. My mate did. And I was just playing with the thermal. I had a great time. It was awesome. So, could not talk. I'm actually excited. I want to run it in the state forest now and see what I'm missing. Now, here's the problem, though. In that morning, I really would have liked to have binoculars as well.
Yep.
Because I found, all right, there the roos are, but I still can't see them with the naked eye. I'd love to then have the binos just to be able to look and see through as well, because you don't have that depth perception with the thermal as well. So it's something, a bit of playing around with there, but geez, it was good. Had a real good time with that.
No, it sounds like very well, I reckon it would come in handy, especially if you're whistling foxes at nighttime. And if they're a bit shy of the spotlight, just scanning around, seeing when they come in, and then properly lining yourself up onto the fox before you even turn the spotlight on. And as soon as you stop him, turn the light on, bang, pot him. I reckon that would make spotlight shy foxes a lot more easier, I reckon.
Yeah. No, look, it would definitely be just, it's a game changer. Like, it was so good just to be able to scan and know where something is so you could sort of sneak in on it to get a better look. Like, it's not a top of the range one. So identifying some things at a distance was a little tricky. I had a pretty good idea, but I wasn't 100%. But you could sneak in a bit more. You knew there's a heat source there. You knew something's that way. So you just sneak in, get closer, have a look. Brilliant. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
No, good. And did you use any other new gear on your trip?
Just the new setup, which I'm sort of thinking I'll probably – wasn't 100% happy with it. I love the way it spread the load. I will say that. I was able to do a lot of Ks and it was comfortable.
Yep.
My only problem with it is that because you've got the bum bag that has shoulder straps, then you've got the small backpack that has shoulder straps, then you've got your bino harness which has shoulder straps. So you had sort of 3. Now, it wasn't uncomfortable, but it was just like there's a lot going on there. So I'm sort of going to have a bit of a play there, I think, and work out what's another sort of way. But it worked really, really well. Like low profile, small, easy. Yeah, I don't know.
Well, there's also those straps that you can put onto the backpack that attach to the bino harness as well.
Yeah.
So that does get another layer of lacing off your body.
Yeah. So that's one. But, yeah, I liked the weight distribution. It was nice and comfy. Yeah. Was not like wearing a backpack. I found I enjoyed that, but just trying to work out. But I also think I can probably look at things and cut them down as well.
Yeah, no.
I sit there and reflect, and there was, for a rut and for what we thought was peak rut, there was no croaking going on up there. I heard one. That was probably the most disappointing part of the trip. Like everything else was fantastic. Couldn't speak more highly about it, except that I heard one croak. I heard no reds roar, which was devastating. That was, you know, I was so pumped to try and hear one. That's going to be a 2025 goal now, I think. But
I was quite lucky to hear a red roar and a fellow croak. There was one croaking just behind camp, the one that you went with Ian down the bottom there with Missy and found all his scrapes. So he actually came into the back of camp one morning. He was croaking and Ian actually called him in.
Oh, wow.
The very, very first morning, actually called him in, and I woke up to croaking, and I first heard it about 100 meters behind the tent, and then next thing I heard it was 30 meters from the tent. So I quickly jumped out to see what was happening and found Ian calling this buck in. So that was pretty cool. And so I was sitting there watching that scrape where I'd spooked that buck earlier in the week, and I heard a red roar down in the valley. And he actually came up and was actually using the wallow about 150 meters away from where I was sitting. And the worst thing about it was the wind was going from me to him. So how have I moved the 100 meters forward to go around this little track to get to that spot? He would have winded me straight away. So I got to listen to a red roar and hear him wallowing. So that was quite interesting and that's quite cool. Frustrating at the same time, Matt. So.
Hey, at least you heard it. I did hear that buck behind camp from the first morning, the first night, about 3 a.m. to 4 a.m. He croaked for about an hour and then just shut up shop.
I've never croaked in the day there.
Yeah, very different compared to the last year in the Snowies in Maragal North. It was much different. There was a lot more croaking going on.
Yeah,
obviously nothing coming into rattles, nothing coming into croaks.
I personally feel the colder weather brings on the croaking more.
Yeah, which probably makes sense. I know in tossing things up, saying it was, you know, it was quite warm. This period's been quite warm. And the feedback, talking to a lot of people, the reds have been very quiet. The rut's been very weird. They'll go for a couple of days, then just stop completely. It's been a very, very different rut and roar. For both species. But then I talked to a couple of guys who were down, they got Maragal South in the ballot and they just said it was croaking like crazy. It was going off. So it might very well be that little bit warmer up where we were in Nundle compared to down south maybe, I'm not sure. But then talking to a couple of blokes that were in north, they said there wasn't the croaking going on as much. So it's just hit and miss, I think. And
it is hit and miss, unfortunately.
That's part of hunting.
That's hunting. Yep, 100%. 100% is part of hunting. I was talking to another fellow, young Anthony, and he showed me his cameras that he had set up down this gully. And he even did a spreadsheet of all the photos and how they lined up and the dates and all the different bucks that he was surveilling. And there was one day, I think it was the 13th and 14th of March, and I was looking at the temperature on his camera, and the temperature didn't go above 14 degrees that day. And it was his busiest day over those 2 days. It was the busiest time. There was 5 different bucks, I believe, come into those scrapes, and you could see them actively in the scrape moving around, and you could see a couple of them calling out as well. And that was a month earlier to when we were there. But once again, that's cemented for me. When it's really cold, I think that they're more active running and calling.
Yeah, no, I think you're right there. I think that was one of the things that was getting tossed around as to why it was so quiet. But then a lot of people were saying on the private that they could hear them going off their head. So it's just just one of those things, right place, right time sometimes. And is what it is.
It's all part of the fun.
It is. Oh, man. You know what? I had so much fun up there. It was, again, big shout out to the boys because they made it such a good trip and there was a lot of fun going on, a lot of good conversations, people just bouncing ideas off each other. Like, that was invaluable. Like, I had a really, really good time.
Yeah, no, I got to experience so many good things during the time spent in the camp. So many new guys were there. People from previous years were there too, and everyone puts their best foot forward in things like this, and it's great to see. Like, I even, young Adam shot this young buck, and he wanted to do a Euro mount, but upon taking the head off this deer, he's shot it in the low neck, but the 270 has skirted up the neck and come out the pretty much just below the eye socket of the skull.
So yep.
The deer's died instantly, which is great, but didn't give us too much to work with as he wanted a Euro mount. So once we found that, well, actually I got to use his Havlon blade, and I, like you, have now been marked by the Havlon blade.
Oh, they're dangerous.
And so I didn't require any stitches though, which is great.
Well, better than I did.
but unfortunately, after using it, I realized that they'd be extremely good for caping out deer. Fantastic for that. Breaking down a deer, I don't think I'd be using them, unfortunately. I think I'd stick to my Vitrinox. But even taking that skin off, I was showing Adam what to do there, and then he did have a Recipro saw, and we were able to take the top of the cap off, which is now going to mount on his wall. I actually sent a photo of it today. It looks pretty bloody epic, actually. Nice. So kudos to him. And just another experience I got to have another person. It was fantastic.
Well, that's what I enjoyed. People, yeah, as you said before, you touched on it, you know, sharing the joy of someone's successful hunt when they're coming back into camp with it. And it was just great, like people coming back and talking and then the strategy and the theory and this is where I'm going and bouncing those ideas off each other. That was awesome. Just good chat to the point where I think I want to do something similar and run a bit of a camp and get a few people around. And just I noticed that everyone had something to, even if, you know, I'm not super experienced, but being able to chat to other people that were more or less experienced and just bounce ideas off each other. And it's what you're there for. And I love talking about hunting, hence why I do the podcast. And yeah, just getting to go and meet people and chat about hunting and then go out hunting, man, how can that not be a winner? So it's something I want to look at doing as well.
I think it's great therapy. And I think every hunter should do one in their lifetime.
Yeah, it was good fun.
Great therapy. Really good fun. I enjoy it. Just talking to heaps of new people about different things, different theories, as you said before, bouncing ideas and just, you know, taking back something back home, that's even better. That's even better in my opinion.
Yeah, no, I loved it. Well, talking about taking something back home, there was you'd been training and not physically, it was desertly.
Oh, yeah. Yes, no, made the apple pie moonshine with the apple crumble and custard dessert, and that got me the Zolio, which I was quite happy about.
So for people that might not have known about Hunt Camp, they got a lot of sponsors behind them, the boys, and which was great, and there was a couple of really good prizes there, one being, well, there was two Zolios up for grabs.
That's correct,
and yeah. One was there was a dessert comp, and then one was first buck or biggest buck. I think it was biggest buck.
It was biggest buck. Our first deer in camp got the knives, which Michael got.
Yep.
For that spy car. And then there was the Boris
drop time. No, was it drop time?
The binoculars. Drop times. Yeah, the binoculars anyway. And that went to young Arthur. He's a bloody great cook, young Arthur. And he's really handy with a knife too. Breaks down deer fantastic. Like, he was really good. He really enjoyed the weekend. You could see him breaking up the deer, and kudos to him, like showing all the new fellas how to do stuff. It was really good to watch someone with his experience pass that on. But yeah, he won the best dessert, and I got second prize, which was the Zolio, which I was over the moon about. I was so happy about that. And brought that home, and I'm looking forward to it. Comes with a subscription as well, so I'm looking forward to getting onto that. And I've got a lot of local state forests close to me, so just being able to go into them and still be able to chat with the missus, let her know where I am. She can see where I am at all times. Just that safety aspect puts her mind at ease, just her able to still talk to me and things like that, that really, really, it's going to really help out in me being able to get out there a lot more, especially doing afternoon or morning sessions.
Yeah, oh, look, I thoroughly liked using it, being able to chat to other people on the Zolio, being able to speak to the wife, just touch base. The plans are pretty good. You can pause them after, I think, the first 3 months, and there's different plans for how much you want to use it. Yeah, look, I think it's a really good system. Connects up to the phone super easy through the app, and then you're just good to go. I thought it was great just to have a play with it and getting the opportunity to play with it as well, because as I said at the start, I don't know if I was sold on it, but then after getting my hands on it and playing with it, going, this is great. Just, you know, hooked it up to the backpacks, charge-wise, lasted ages, super easy to use. I've got the phone on me anyway for using a Venza. Man, what a win.
Oh, definitely. I was.
And their price point's pretty good. $375, I think.
Oh, it's pretty much the same as a PLB, but this thing here, you can do so much more with it. It's not just one button, and there's heaps of things you can do with it.
Talk to emergency services, say what's going on. Yeah, no, look, I'm sold. It's definitely on the wish list now. It's a really good bit of gear. So congrats, mate. Well done getting it. And I will say the apple pie moonshine, I'm not a dessert person. If you know me, I'm not a dessert person. Literally never eat it. And the opposite of my wife, who got up me because she's like, how did you not try his dessert? And I was like, I don't. Dessert's not me. I don't ever eat it. I will say that I do like to have a drink. And that apple moonshine, oh, man, that was good.
Tastes just like apple pie in a can.
Oh, it was beautiful. Massive props to that, and good on you for winning the Zolio. That was well deserved, because I know you'd been trying very hard and perfecting it, and you bit of a how you had to cook your little custard pie or whatever it was, apple pie.
Oh, yeah. Swear that. So I had to make it from scratch, and you've got to throw it inside the – had to be cooked over a fire, and like, it rained as well, so that made it even more interesting, but –
and then your tray was too big. You had to
fold that in and make that fit. And it was just it worked in the end. It worked in the end, and that's all that mattered. It got there, which that's the aim of it. So that worked out well. And it's a really good bit of kit. I was really excited to even be able to use it. And it sold me on the idea I was going to buy one anyway. Even if I didn't win one, I was going to buy one straight afterwards. And as the wife explained to me, for an extra $17, I probably could have just bought one to truth outright instead of buying all the ingredients to make the apple pie moonshine and the apple crumble. But it definitely came in handy. Had to send an emergency SOS to cousin Anthony. Told him I forgot the fettuccine pasta to go with the sauce, and he was able to bring that into camp. So that was fantastic. That saved. And saved a night's worth of food, which was good. So, bloody great bit of kit. And that and the vest, I think I'm nearly home and hosed with me setup.
Mate, I'm gonna try on the next hunt a little bit different. I think I'll run a new pack. I've got that Ridgeline. I think it's like a 35 or 45 liter.
Yep.
So I might run that instead of the waist belt and the 12 liter pack. Or I'll try and downsize a lot of my stuff. For the next one, I'm not going to be taking, you know, my rattle pack. I'm not going to be taking a few things like that. So I keep taking my shooting sticks out with me, and I think it's just pointless. I don't ever use them. Like I just find I'm either looking for a rest or going freestanding. So I'm sort of sitting there going, oh, I might pull them out. There is things there that I can just pull. Like I've got gloves. I sort of always like to have a little bit more just in case, but I'm starting to go, you know what, they've been in the pack for a bit now, I haven't used them. Yes, keep the first aid gear, yes, this all the safety stuff, but there are things I can that I don't need to have them in the pack, but I do like to have them in the pack.
Things
so
that you can do without sometimes. It also depends on your hunting strategy too. If you go that particular day, like that buck that I missed, I reckon having a shooting stick would have helped out phenomenally in that situation.
Yeah.
But, you know, you don't know when you're going to use a thing. If you're sitting down there overlooking a scrape and you have time to set up your shooting stick with a rifle on it ready to go, hey, great. If you're there stalking through timber and moving through a lot, then, you know, maybe you don't have to use the stick. So it really depends on what type of hunting you're going to be doing the day, pretty much.
That was the other thing I didn't like about the system I was running. It doesn't have the connecting points to run my QR0, the Moroka 30 QR0 sling.
Yep.
I love that thing. Just not having to hold the rifle all the time. Now, I was running their Stalker sling, but nowhere near as good. I like it, but not as good as the zero, because you just, your hands are free, the weight goes through the pack, so you're not, it's not on you. Whereas I found, obviously, the Stalker Sling's on your shoulder. It's just another piece as well of what I had on there. So it's all trade-offs. And I think you're right.
It is all trade-offs. Exactly right.
I think I might start running different things. So if I'm exploring, I might run the little 12-liter and the bum bag, because that's just really nice to walk with. So I might even see if I can downsize a little bit of that and get rid of one of them or whatnot. And then the other one is, once I've explored and I'm just stalking, that could be the way to go, running a pack with the QR0. So it's, look, it's trial and error, a bit of fun, bit of playing. I like that stuff too. Like, even every time I go out for the hunt, just reflecting on my gear, what could be better.
Yeah, fine
all
tuning.
Those things. It is. Fine tuning is a big thing. I'm loving the Ticker Aspire 308. That's a brilliant rifle.
It's a good bit of kit. It's a nice rifle.
It's very nice. I do really, really like Zero Tech scope I've got on there. In low light, man, value for money, I think it's absolutely fantastic. It's definitely, I've got two Zero Techs now and I'd rate both of them. I'm really impressed. So I'm happy with the rifle setup now. Nice weight. Good 2.5x15, good range. Oh, yeah, couldn't be happier with the rifle. Now, yeah, a little bit of tweaking still, or maybe a couple more trips just to get used to it and see if it gets a little bit better or whatnot first, and, yeah, play it by ear. But that's part of the fun. Like,
oh, 100%
it's all part of it, working it out, coming up with these ideas. Ah, oh, it's good.
Keeps you on your toes, that's for sure. And the scope was mounted well, didn't shoot sideways.
No, look, I know that's a bit of a stab at your cousin. He did a great job. He helped us mount it. I know you talked me into it, because I've got all the gear here and I was like, oh, I'm just going to mount it myself. I've never had an issue mounting him. And then you started telling me he's got all these little fancy bits of equipment, and I was like, oh, now I'm curious. So he lives pretty close. So I shot up there and got him to walk us through the whole thing. And he did very well. Came up perfect. Shooting very nicely. I'm super happy. So thanks, Anthony. I know you're listening, and we'll get you on the podcast soon, because there's a few things that I want to talk to you about with your cousin here. Yeah, it's coming.
No one wants to hear him. You're going to have to get a smaller microphone.
Mate, some of the comments in the Facebook chat.
How good's the chat? How good's the Hardcat chat?
It's mainly just watching you two pick each other apart. I am of the mind to get you both on here, and I'll just mute my microphone and let you two go at it, because it is good to watch and listen to. I'm telling you that much. Between the banter from you two is absolutely fantastic. He's paying you out today about missing that buck that was so close.
Yeah, and he's going through all the phases of being one of Snow White's dwarfs, and taking to look over the wallow for a red deer, and he just starts sneezing because he's getting hay fever, and told him he has to shove his two fingers up his nose and shut up before I put him in the wallow himself. And but I wouldn't have anyone else next to me. I'd rather have him sneeze next to me than anyone else, to be honest with you.
Or sleeping. Don't forget him falling asleep.
Oh, yeah, and sleeping as well. Yeah, we're on this track and there's heaps of deer walking past the front center. So his idea was, let's just sit up here and we'll wait. And so we're just waiting there. And I thought Jane was sitting behind me. I thought she was snoring, and I give her a bit of an elbow jab and the snoring didn't stop. And I'm like, what's going on? So I picked up my phone and just put on reverse and looked behind me, and here he is, old sleepy, just sitting down on the
having a nod.
Having a good old nod. But kudos, Steve. It sounded like someone trying to start a chainsaw, so it didn't sound out of place inside the forest, that's for sure. But it's good humor, and we've grown up shooting together, and I've been shooting next to him for over 30 years now, and we gel together like chalk and cheese, and we know how far we can push each other. Yeah, so It did take him, 2 weeks before he started paying me out for that shot, because he knew it was very raw just after it happened. But now we can sit back and joke about it, and, it's all jovial now. So,
it's all part of it. I mean, you're not going to shoot every single deer you see, so these things happen. And the way I see it is, you're getting eyes on deer, getting the shoot. Jones coming along really well. Man, there's so many positives to take out of it.
Oh, just, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, it's
just
all wins.
You can't let one bad thing ruin your whole week, that's for sure. But it just makes you hungry for more. Makes you hungry for more. So
yeah, couldn't agree more. No, it was a ripper time. Thoroughly enjoyed it. And thanks to the boys for putting it on. And I'm looking forward to getting out again shortly.
Yeah, no, great time with great people, and just the fact that it's free and anyone was able to access this if they wanted to, and just the amount of knowledge being passed around from person to person, just what an absolute bloody great week. I wish I was still there, that's for sure.
No, I'll second that. I had an absolute blast. So thanks to the boys at the Hunters Campfire, Jono, Ian, and Mark, organising everything. A lot goes into it, and it was a ripper. So thanks, boys. Well done. Thanks for having me. Really appreciate that, and I learned a lot, and it was great to meet up in person. So thoroughly enjoyed that. And, look, I am disappointed I wasn't there when you got bogged. That would have just really added to the week.
Fair dinkum. Well, a man's got to get bogged once in his life, so I'm glad I was around friends when it happened. That's for sure.
I'm just glad the footage was there. We might even put that up on the socials.
Seriously.
All right, guys. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll catch you next time. Bye for now.
Cheers, guys.
If you have a topic, guest, question, or any gear that you want to hear about on the podcast, shoot us an email, australianhuntingandbeyond@gmail.com. Alternatively, find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. All the links are in the show notes. If you haven't already, make sure you give us a review and subscribe to our podcast on whatever platform you're listening on. Thanks for joining us, and we'll catch you next time.